It's the second hour of the 9 to noon show this morning. It's Donald Kavanagh with you on the programme until 12 midday. Good luck to Savannah Sweeney starting her junior cert exams today. That's from Dad, Mum and Joshua Sienna. Thank you. I'm presuming Savannah is well into her first English paper at the moment and will not be listening at this point in time. But certainly our thoughts, as we said earlier, are with all of those who are doing their exams at the moment. As I said, I did my Leaving Cert 42. years ago, and it's still a memory that's burnt into my synapses of my brain. Caller says, regarding the golf hole-in-one merger, it sounds like Rory McIlroy was one of the only ones not to take the hundreds of millions. Did someone say Rory was livid? I'd say Rory's raging. And thank you, Kevin in Dunlow, for that glorious pun. Caller says, can you please tell people to look after their animals in this hot weather? The cars and the pavements are roasting hot. Our animals need plenty of shelter and water. They cannot adapt to this heat, so we need to protect them. And absolutely, I would concur with that. Bunkrana traffic, caller says, is an absolute nightmare. Westbrook Bridge is a disgrace. You simply cannot get out onto the main road. We need traffic lights, but maybe that's too simple a solution. And the caller says, at the moment, on the road from Lifford to Letterkenny, there is a line of paint. It looks like it leaked from a vehicle. Now, the caller says there are road markings being painted on the Old Port Road at the moment in Letterkenny. Could it be that this line of paint on the road between Lifford and Letterkenny is potentially linked with those works? We don't want to be making any such presumptions, but it's a question that's been asked, and we'll put it out there, as the man said. Now, you'll have heard in the news that Minister Heather Humphreys is in Donegal today. She's Minister for Rural Development and is the coordinator of the Our Rural Future programme. She performed a number of duties yesterday, and I spoke to the Minister while she was opening the new DLDC offices in Letterkenny, not all that far away from us here on the mountaintop in Letterkenny. And Minister Humphreys was speaking about the launch of the new island plan that's taking place today. She's going to be on Arran Moor. She's en route there now, as I understand it. But yesterday she was right across. She was in Brookless, she was in Mallinbeg, she was in Crossroads Killigordon, and she was also in Letterkenny. And as I say, heading for Arran Moor to launch a plan for the islands. And when I spoke to the Minister in Letterkenny last evening, this is what she had to say about this island plan that is being launched.
The island strategy, I think it's about 26 years since the last one was launched. I have been to Arran Moor. This is my third time to visit it. It's a particularly beautiful island, and of course all of Donegal is particularly beautiful in the sunshine that we've had today. But I'm back there in Arran Moor to launch this island strategy, and what this is about is about it's a plan so that we can support island communities, because island communities have challenges. We have our own challenges in rural Ireland that we're overcoming, but island communities have an additional set of challenges when you think of connectivity and how they get there. And their big thing is how they can increase their population. So this is looking at education, it's looking at housing, it's looking at how we can get more people working on the islands, it's looking at remote working, it's looking at e-health, it's how we take new technology, how we embrace it and maximise it for the benefit of the people living on islands.
And that was Minister Heather Humphreys speaking to us yesterday, as we said, and she's en route to Arran Moor, and that launch taking place on Arran Moor. It's the 9 till noon show. You can make your views known to us. You can text us or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. Call us on 074 91 25000. 00353 74 91 25000. If you're outside of the dialing area, it's at Highland Radio on Twitter, Highland Hub on Facebook. It's comments at highlandradio.com if you choose to use email. Now, yesterday on the programme, we spoke to Kevin McGinney of SIPTU. He's one of the retained firefighters who have embarked on industrial action, which could escalate into strike in the coming weeks if there isn't an agreement reached. They have been speaking about their grievances and the demands they have in order to ensure more recruitment and retention for the service. There is a call, and you'll have heard on the newspaper review this morning, the headline on the Finn Valley Voice, employ more firefighters. That's the call from Councillor Martin Harley. And Councillor Harley joins us live on the line this morning. Martin, good morning to you.
Morning, Donald.
Councillor Hardy, you have acknowledged that, yes, there is a need for more recruitment, but if that recruitment is going to happen, there need to be changes to the terms and conditions under which retained firefighters are hired, and you believe the council and ultimately government need to go into serious discussions with Kevin McKinney and his colleagues to see what agreements can be reached.
Yeah, it's at the moment, talking to local firefighters here in the Twin Towns, the way it is at the moment, they're on call 24/7, 365 days a year. And I think in the current times, we talk about better working conditions. I think we need to employ more firefighters, that firefighters can have their time off. And they can be rostered on a certain level that you know that you're going to have your time off. I mean, everyone has to have take their holidays and have their breaks and their different family gatherings. So I think it's not fair to expect them to be on call all the time. So I think that needs to be looked at. That's one of the things that needs to be looked at. The second thing needs to be looked at to try and get more people to join the fire service. We need to look at the distance. At the moment, I think it's 2.5 kilometres. From the fire station, you have to live to be accepted onto the fire service. I think we need to extend that radius out slighter, because if you take Stranorra Fire Service down on the Lifford side of Stranorra, you probably would be quicker getting from Killigordon to the station than you would be from the top of Donegal Road, especially during busy times. So we have to look at those things as well. At the same time, we have to try and keep, I know, the call-out time as quick as we can to save lives and but where there's fires, that people are on call quick to stop that as well. So there is issues there that needs to be addressed. But I think the main one for a lot of fire service people is the 24/7, 365 days. I think that's the big problem.
Because the reality is, I will finish work here this evening, and if I choose to go out for a pint with a friend tonight, I can do so. If I choose to go to the cinema, switch my phone off, sit back and relax for 2 hours, I can do so. If I choose to leave my phone charging in one room, go into a different room and chat with my family and ignore the phone for the rest of the day, which I do frequently, that's not a problem. If I am a retained firefighter, it's a big problem, because I am not in control of my time. I am not in control of what I can do once I leave my place of work.
That's correct, yeah. And you take maybe an instance of where you have, like, firefighters have families as well, where if their partner goes out, that the firefighter has to look after kids. You just can't walk out the run out the door and leave the kids there. So there's a lot of, it's very simple issues that need to be addressed. Like it's a great big conversation is working from home and work-life balance. That doesn't come into it when you talk about firefighter. They don't have any of that. So we have to look at the bigger picture. And there is going to be a cost to this. I mean, let's be realistic. There's going to be a cost to this. It's not going to come without a cost. But I think the cost shouldn't be even come into the stage. I guess overall, probably for Donegal, if you looked at it, you may be looking at another, for the whole county, maybe another 1.5 million. And when you see government billions that are being saved over the last number of years, I think to put an extra if you take 1.5 billion, put that into the 26 counties on the bigger scale of things, that's not a lot of money, and it gives people a better standard of life as well, and plus it'll be more attractive for people to join as well.
They're also talking about the two issues with money, which are, number one, the retainer you're paid as a retained firefighter will not be counted toward a mortgage, for instance. It'll not be accepted by a bank as collateral toward a mortgage, and that's going to put you at a disadvantage. Also, the issue that pension entitlements after you retire are under question and under scrutiny as well. So, I mean, there will be certainly financial costs associated with that. But again, I suppose that does have to be balanced against the question, what do we need to do in order to ensure that we have the fire service that we need and the fire service that guarantees the best possible response?
Yeah, that's all. I mean, there's a lot of issues there that probably that would have to be discussed at a union and a personal level among the existing firefighters that wouldn't be kind of I wouldn't like to discuss it on the airwave, but, you know, there are issues there that, and I think that there can be a solution come to it. It's such an important job as well. And I wouldn't envy their job, at some of the situations that they have to go to. And it's not everybody that will be able to do that job. And we have to admire them. We take them for granted, but they have to be the fantastic work that they do. So I think we have to go sit down around the table and talk to them and come to a solution. I think the overall price of this and the bigger scheme of things is not a massive price, I think, overall nationally even, never mind locally.
On a day-to-day basis, Donegal County Council does manage the retained fire service, the service and the stations, etc., the equipment and all that are under council control. Realistically speaking, how much discretion does the council have to have discussions locally with firefighters in terms of their terms and conditions, or is the council bound by national agreements and by national rules which are set in Dublin?
No, I think there can be discussion locally as well. I mean, our Director of Services in Donegal County Council, Gary Martin, has been. I talked to him last week regarding this one. I know this industrial action coming up, and he felt that there can be talks there, and there can be things worked out going forward. So I think there's national issues, but then there's local issues that can be addressed as well. I mean, to call out times and distances from the fire station may vary within different areas, different counties. So that thing that we can address that locally. We can look at each fire station individually as to call out times and distances as well. So I think that can be addressed locally. So there are local issues that we can look at, and I'm sure I know Gary has a good relationship with the fire service in Donegal, and I know Gary would be willing to talk to them on that.
From your own discussions with the fire service personnel that you've been talking to in recent days, do you get the sense from them that they will be, and I certainly got the sense from Kevin McKinney yesterday, I'd have to say, that they do want to talk, that they do want to reach agreement, and that they do want to get this behind them and just go back to what they are doing, which is to be the best possible firefighting service they can be?
Yeah, that was the conversation that I had with the number. But they do want to do the job. They do want to do the job, and they put their name forward to do this job, and they want to do it. They don't want to be having this discussion. This discussion, they would rather not see this discussion happen. They'd rather see it sorted, as you say, and get back to doing what they want to do. But just I think the main issue, I feel, other than financial issues, I think the main issue is a roster system that they have proper time off, and that they can have their family get-togethers, they can have their night out, they can have a work-life balance the same as other people in other jobs.
Councillor Martin Harley, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Donal.
That's Martin there, and that retained firefighters dispute is one that's going to go on, and we will watch with interest to see if there is a resolution to this, and hopefully there will be. Now, just got a note in, caller says, I can't believe the children's allowance was paid €100 for each child today. What about the pensioners? Now, I may be wrong here, and if I am wrong, I will apologise in advance. My understanding is that there may be an extra payment given under children's allowance today in terms of back to school. So we know that parents are going to be hit with extra charges over the summer. At the moment, it's exam season you're going to be moving into over the summer, where people will have to be looking after children and then trying to buy school uniforms and books, etc. and all that. So it may well be that there's an extra payment to do with back to school. That could be the situation. If I am wrong, I apologise in advance, but I think that may very much be the case. Now, we're going to take a short break, and after the break, we're going to talk about new rules of etiquette and how we need to change the rules of etiquette, and how the changing sort of pace of life means changes in the way we are expected to act. That's coming up after these.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
Let's talk about etiquette and rules of behaviour. You may remember the old days of Edith Wharton, Winona Ryder in The Age of Innocence, a portrayal of of that era we've all seen on our screens. Jane Austen's writings, of course, absolutely dripping with doing the right thing. And sometimes we may think in this busy, fast-paced 21st century that etiquette is an aged, boring concept that doesn't really apply to us anymore. But perhaps there are just new rules of etiquette out there that we aren't exactly quite sure what they are. And I certainly have found myself once or twice wondering, is this the right thing to do or not? And even more so, I have found myself being told by my children what I should be doing because I've been doing it wrong. Joined on the line by Emily Hurricane, who recently wrote a very interesting magazine article about this whole question. Emily, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well indeed. I suppose there are certain things that are self-evident. One does not take out one's phone and start texting somebody in the middle of a conversation. But I'm sure, and we'll start there, because the mobile phone is probably maybe one of the centerpieces. If we do have a new etiquette, surely use of mobile phones is going to have to be up there as one of the top three issues that will arise.
Well, definitely. And I think it's really funny that you pick the example of we obviously do not take out our phones and start texting somebody in the middle of the conversation. The reality is that we do. People do that all the time now. That would have been considered rude. It would probably have been called out as rude, even up to, I think, about 3 years ago. But recently, I think that we don't even notice how rude that is anymore. It happens all the time. There is a line that I write in this piece that I wrote for the Sunday Independent Life magazine, which is basically to say that your full attention is now the most flattering thing that you can give anybody. So in a world in which pretty much every one of us is constantly dividing our attention between what's happening in front of us and what's happening in the online world that we equally inhabit, it is very rare that you get full attention from anyone anymore. People will half listen. They'll say, I just need to send this text. I just need to check that WhatsApp group. I'm just doing whatever it is that they're doing, whether they're on social media. And they no longer feel, mostly, I believe, that not doing these things is necessary. So in the piece I write, just put your phone away, unless you're a brain surgeon, on call. Put your phone away. There is literally nothing so important that it can't wait for 10 or 15 minutes.
In terms of our interactions, say dining, for instance, the concept of a family sitting around a table and not having phones on the table and just having a meal and having a conversation, it seems almost to be a redundant concept. And in embracing this new a freedom of the information age that we find ourselves in this century, have we thrown the baby out with the bathwater in terms of our behaviour, in terms of our, we've thrown out all the boring, stuffy stuff that we don't need anymore, but in doing so, we've perhaps thrown out a lot of what benefited us as well, and we don't even realise it.
Yeah, and I think that maybe we have also neglected to keep the things that make life a little bit more pleasant. So one of the starting points for this piece was, you know, we think of etiquette and we kind of laugh. We go, it very much is that Edith Wharton. You know, what china have you used for the dinner party? And what does it mean that you have used this particular set of china? You know, we think it's old fashioned and laughable. But in fact, if you consider etiquette to be the thing, the set of things that makes daily interactions more pleasant and more palatable, then I think it kind of comes back into its own. When you look at the world that we live in now, it's frantic. It's really rushed. As I say, like most of us are doing at least two, if not three things at any one time. We are, you know, our attention is divided. Our phones are clamoring for attention. The people in front of us are clamoring for attention. The speed of everything has speeded up. The automation of things, very hard to talk to an actual person now. The daily irritations of life are far more considerable than they were 20 years ago. And I think that that is where etiquette comes back in. And if we stop seeing it as something outdated and silly and go, no, these are the things that we can actually do to restore a little sense of harmony to the world that we live in, to take some of the friction and irritation out of it. And it is small things. It is exactly that thing of when having dinner, whether with your family or your friends, sit and have dinner with them, talk to them. You know, don't half talk and half look at your phone while they do exactly the same thing. And we do, you know, this gets mentioned a lot in parenting advice, for example. you know, this is a valuable opportunity for you as a parent to check in with your kids and see what's going on with them. So make the most of it. Make rules around no phones at the dinner table. I think you can also just rephrase that and go, this is just basic common courtesy. This is just a small way in which we make the way that we live in, the world that we live in, a little bit more pleasant. So it's that kind of thing. It's the kind of interface between the online life and real life that really I found myself very much talking about in the piece.
In terms of the reaction that you've got to the piece, I'm sure there'll be many people will have reacted and said, thank God someone is saying this because it needs to be said. I'm sure there'll also be people going, what century is she living in?
Well, if there are, and there may well be, I haven't come across them yet. In fact, mainly what I've had is people telling me, you should have put this in. You should have put in. So there was a whole thing about cycling that I got from a couple of different people. Obviously, what's happening on the road now is also really irritating us. There was an awful lot of people saying, you know, what I think maybe doesn't really fall into etiquette, you know, this thing about never being able to speak to a real person. But essentially what I got was, I mean, in a way, probably you could just have kept writing that piece. You know, you could have added more and more and more to it. Because every time I looked at a different aspect of life, I discovered that obviously there are more and more things that we feel strongly about. You know, there was something, for example, the I am greener than thou attitude was something that also came up a lot. People kind of going, well, you know, we're all trying. And I don't want to be made to feel bad because you are vegan on Mondays and I'm not. Or, you know, because you recycle more than I do. You know, do it. Don't boast about it. And some of it just falls back into, you know, these are old rules of etiquette. Boasting is never very charming. Boasting never really makes other people feel good. And I think ultimately when you talk about etiquette, you're talking about manners. And the fundamental point of manners is that you try to make other people feel comfortable. You, in some small way, put yourself out in order to make somebody else feel better or more at ease, you know, whether it's giving up a chair or not telling them, you know, how amazing your kids are and how they did really brilliantly in the Leaving Cert that their child is just about to sit and maybe feeling a bit iffy about. You know, you'd think that those are obvious, and I think they used to be obvious, but I don't think they're obvious anymore because the entire world of social media, it sometimes seems to me, is predicated on boasting. You know, oh, you know, this amazing thing happened to me and I'm putting up a picture of it, I'm putting a post about it. You know, there's so much of that online now that I think there's a genuine confusion about the fact that that isn't always very polite. It doesn't make other people feel good about themselves. Why are you doing it? You're doing it because you're happy. You're not doing it to add to the sum of general happiness. And it just tends to more and more leak from online into real life.
Are we mistaking online interaction for real friendship and treating our interactions in real life as we would treat them online?
That is a good question. I don't know. I think that at this stage, we probably need to accept that our online interactions are real friendship. I don't think that we can make the distinction anymore. I would make the distinction. I don't think that our online interactions, by and large, certainly mine, are as satisfying as my real life interactions, where you have, you know, obviously a kind of a 360 degree approach to communication in which, you know, there is a kind of non-verbal or non-written element to it, which is also really important. I certainly think that I get more from my real life interactions, and from what I've read about this, I'm not alone. Generally, we do get more from our real life interactions. But that said, I mean, we really do lead an awful lot of our lives online. I don't think we can dismiss that and go, those aren't real friendships. They are. But I do think that having those online friendships and those online interactions has definitely changed the way we behave in real life.
Some things that will have changed over the years, and I'm certainly old enough to remember a time when if a smoker were in somebody's house, they would pretty much reach for a packet and ask for an ashtray with the expectation that they would be permitted to smoke within that house or within that area. These days, if a smoker looked at a box within somebody else's home, I suspect the reaction they get would be, you know, one of absolute disgust, if not out and out horror. That certainly has changed over the years. Are there other examples where maybe we have changed behaviours that now we would see as being horrendously bad manners, whereas maybe 30 years ago it wouldn't have been?
Yeah, I think that that is certainly true. And I think that smoking is a great example of what you can achieve. You know, I mean, if we made the collective effort around mobile phone use that we made around smoking, if we acknowledge this is not necessarily good for us, certainly it should be limited. And if we put the kind of social regulation around mobile phone use that we have around cigarettes and smoking, I think definitely in, you know, I don't know, 5 or 10 more years, you would be back to a stage where to pick up your phone casually while you're in the middle of a conversation with somebody and send a text or check an email or whatever would be really frowned on. And I think that that would be a good thing. And I'm sure loads of people completely disagree with me on it, which is fine. But, you know, it can happen. Social mores and norms can absolutely change. I mean, one example that I give in the piece is I think that, you know, even maybe 5 or 6 years ago, if I had not responded to an email that somebody had sent me, or if somebody did not respond to an email that I sent them asking them for something, I would consider that was rude. You know, I would wonder why they hadn't responded, you know, and you would even maybe, would you spiral into, God, you know, did they not want to do the thing that I asked them to do? Or, you know, why are they not responding and answering? Now, I think we all accept that the sheer volume of, of communication is just so, so high that, of course, people don't respond. You know, how many thousand emails do you get in the course of a week? Yeah, things are going to fall through the cracks. So, no, it is no longer rude that somebody hasn't responded. Sorry. And it is also equally, I don't think it's rude to remind them that they haven't responded. So, I mean, that is, you know, kind of a very small and kind of obvious example of how things have changed.
I would have had the habit of, if someone had texted me and said, are you okay for that meeting, or will we meet at 7 o'clock, wherever, I would tend to respond with the thumbs up emoji.
Yes.
Until I was told by my daughter, apparently that's rude.
Yeah. I have also been told by my kids the very same thing. I still don't quite get it, I have to say.
I still do it, to be honest.
Yeah, like I still occasionally send a thumbs up emoji. I mean, you know, maybe you don't need to respond. You know, maybe this is self-evident. I'll see you at 10 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you need a thumbs up emoji? No, you probably don't. But I mean, if you're sending something, it's quicker and easier to do that than it is to, yes, I will see you at 10.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't quite. I'm sure there are many shades of emoji use that I don't 100% understand. And I have to say that I often look at my phone and discover a series of new emojis have been added, and I have absolutely no idea what they mean.
Well, I can tell you, I use 4 emojis.
Yeah,
I will use. I will use the. I use the thumbs up. I use the laughing out loud. I use the wink, and I use the. And I've been told I'm potentially wrong with this. I use the red heart as well sometimes.
Oh really? Because I use that a lot. Why are we wrong about that?
Yeah, apparently because I would use the red. I mean, if for instance, if someone posts up, it's my dad's anniversary today. Happy heavenly birthday, Dad, or whatever, something like that.
Yes,
I will put a heart. I won't make a comment. And I don't like the care thing. I just don't like the care thing for some reason. So I will just put a red heart that just says, lots of love, I'm thinking of you. And, you know, and if they see the notification, great. If they don't see the notification, no harm done. Same goes for birthdays. I mean, you know, you try to respond to birthday greetings and you respond to the first 10 or 11. And then if more start coming in, you get to the point where you just, nah, can't. And then the next day you put up a big thanks to everybody. And then you put a big thanks to everybody for your wonderful wishes on my birthday. And then all your friends that didn't send you a text go, oh, Lord, I'm so guilty now because I never sent a message.
Yes.
And you can't win on that one. You just cannot win on that one.
No, you can't win. I mean, that just reminded me of something. Wasn't there some English politician who responded to somebody putting very much this message of, you know, a bereavement message or something, or an in memoriam message with LOL? Because he thought LOL meant lots of love.
Yeah.
And then everyone went, oh my God, laughing out loud, really, at this person posting about their dead relative. And he was genuinely lost and confused in the world. So, I mean, the other thing that I preach in the piece and that I think we can't ever preach enough is Just be kind and patient and tolerant. Nobody's going to get it right all the time. A lot of it is new. Some of it is confusing. You know, and rules change. I mean, I think LOL did once upon a time mean lots of love. So, you know, just be decent and kind to each other is the fundamental underpinning of everything that falls into the category of etiquette. It just is. Try to make people, you know, try to make them feel at ease and, you know, just don't overreact and go nuts because somebody uses the wrong emoji.
Yeah.
We'll all survive.
This is slightly off topic, but I did once, in fact, a friend had lost his partner and I did send a message, and as I was sending it, I went to hit the heart and I hit the wrong one. And
oh,
I sent the message with the laughing out loud emoji at the end of it. I immediately realised what I'd done. I couldn't recall it. I messaged him straight back within a tenth of a second. I messaged him straight back saying, I am so, so sorry. Now, he messaged me back saying, it's cool, myself and the lads got a great laugh out of it, actually. You know, and thankfully, he realised it was a mistake, but I was, I didn't send an emoji for weeks afterwards.
It happens. My sister did exactly the same thing under very similar circumstances with a unicorn emoji, like a unicorn sticker. And then she sent them, and this was on a group, and we were all sending condolences.
Yeah.
She was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I mean, it happens, you know. It just does happen. And again, this person said they got a laugh out of it. And I mean, if you have provided a laugh to somebody who is in a difficult place in their life, that's great.
Yeah.
That is amazing. They know you didn't mean the laughing, crying emoji. You know, they knew that my sister didn't mean the unicorn emoji. It was just funny.
Yeah. Comments in from a listener. Most young people do not respect older members of the community. For example, getting on public transport or getting up to give a seat, even to mothers with babies and young children. Now, I'm of an age where that would have been absolutely ingrained in me and it would just be an automatic reaction. It seems for many people these days it isn't. And is that one of those rules that really and truly, you know, it hasn't changed in 200, 300, 400 years, that it still is good manners to offer your seat to somebody who is older than yourself or a woman with a baby or whatever?
God, yes. I mean, that rule will never, ever, ever change. That is a set in stone rule. Of course you should do that. I feel sad when I hear that this doesn't happen. My personal feeling and take on it is that it is probably more that the young person in question hasn't even noticed. They're so busy doing what they do online. They are so involved in what's on the screen in front of them that they haven't actually noticed that there is somebody who they should be offering the seat to. I mean, I dearly hope that that is true. It's a pity because obviously they should notice and they should stand up. And also I think it's a pity for them. I think those small interactions, those small and pleasant interactions are, you know, they're part and parcel of formulating a belief in the world as a decent place, which I think is really important because I think a lot of social media, particularly Twitter, which can be very antagonistic, it feeds into this idea of the world as a very antagonistic place, as a very negative place, as a place where people are kind of angry and critical. Whereas I actually don't think that that is what the world is like. And I think that if you are going about your daily business and you're on buses and pavements and in and out of shops and not permanently on your phone, you get a chance to see that the world is full of really decent people. You know, you stand up and offer your seat to somebody and that person thanks you and they sit down and they take your seat. Or sometimes they say, no, I'm fine. I don't need your seat, but thank you anyway. You know, and you go on your way having had this really tiny but really positive interaction. And I think that it is a shame that, you know, that happens less because the phone sucks up more. I mean, I sound like a dinosaur. I know I do. But I'm going to take it. I'm willing to sound like a dinosaur. I do believe in those things. I think that the opportunities missed to interact with people, whether it's on a bus or in a shop. And as I say, they're small. You may never, ever see this person again in your whole life. But it is part and parcel of feeding into this idea that, yeah, the world is full of decent people.
Finally, and before we go, and we're coming to the end, I want to raise what's become a very thorny issue in recent times, and indeed it became a very legal issue in one celebrated case in this country over the past couple of months, late last year. That's the issue of pronouns. Again, I'm of an age where it was all very simple. It was either he or she. And I can't quite get my head around referring to someone as they because it sounds awfully impersonal. And we're at a point where we want to do the right thing, and there are going to be cases, and it's going to be one of those where we're going to mess it up because we're just not used to adapting to pronouns depending on people's preferences and so on, and depending on how people identify. And maybe sometimes we just don't know how somebody identifies. And that's creating a whole new minefield that's presenting a challenge in terms of etiquette too, isn't it?
It is. And I think that probably, I think that younger people find this much easier maybe than we do. It's very new to us. And, you know, it takes some getting our heads around. The younger people, my kids seem to just, you know, find it really quite easy to adapt to. I think that if it can be covered by just really quite basic courtesy, we'll all be fine. You know, if somebody wishes to be referred to as they, then, you know, good manners suggest that this is what we do. And the same good manners suggest that if somebody gets it wrong, that the person in question would just, you know, take a minute to say that this is what they would prefer. They don't even need to go into the reasons why. Just reiterate, you know, I would rather if you refer to me as they, you know, or any of the other. I mean, there are now many pronouns, and I'm not going to get into it because I'll get some of them wrong. But, you know, again, it just comes down to this is what they have asked for. Why would we not do it? You know, I don't understand why anybody would, you know, kind of get up in arms about that. It seems to me reasonably simple. You know, and then again, if we get it wrong, you know, let's not attack anybody for that. Let's just explain if they have genuinely got it wrong rather than are making a point of saying it wrong. Just, you know, explain to them and give them a chance to get it right.
I remember over 40 years ago in school, our civics teacher said to us, we were talking about issues like this, and I'm going back to fifth year in 1980, and our civics teacher sort of said to us, look, lads, here's the bottom line, he said. Treat everyone else the way you'd like them to treat you, and you won't go too far wrong.
He's right. I mean, he's absolutely right. I think that probably just about covers everything, doesn't it? Take a minute. How would you like this person to treat you? And then just go do the same.
Yeah. Emily Hourican, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much.
It's the Lionsill Noon Show on Highland Radio. A very good morning to you. Donal with you until 12 noon. 086 60 25000. Text or WhatsApp us with your views and your perceptions. Caller says, I was in Letterkenny at the weekend. A complete disaster with traffic. The town's destroyed with traffic lights everywhere. They can design nothing right in this country, only in Ireland. And all I'm going to say to you is, in 2 weeks' time, we have Rally Weekend. And that's the weekend you're going to have traffic in Letterkenny. It's going to bring a lot of investment. It's going to bring a lot of money. It's going to bring a lot of visitors. And it's going to bring a lot of economic benefit as well. Don't get me wrong. But Rally Weekend is the one weekend, if you're travelling anywhere in the vicinity, allow extra time for your journeys. Expect there's going to be lots of traffic out there. And Rally Weekend is always wonderfully busy. Now, I want to go to James, who's on line one, because James has an interesting point to raise with us. James, a very important point indeed. Good morning.
Yes, Donald, how are you doing?
Very well indeed. Now, we're talking about traffic in Letterkenny, and one of the areas that comes up time and time again when we discuss traffic in Letterkenny is the four lane, where those works are, we believe, coming to an end. Now, on the Polestar side of that, it's one thing. On the Dry Arch side, you have, there's the Tannery Hotel. As you're driving out, there's the Tannery on the right, there's the Dry Arch Complex on the left, there's the entrance down toward Bonagie, and then beside the Dry Arch Complex there's what would have been Martin's filling station. It's now boarded, but there is a post box there, and there is a difficulty for people accessing that post box, particularly people with disabilities and mobility issues.
Yes, Donald, and just to give a wee, very brief background, I'll be a member of the PPN, which is the Public Participation Network of Donegal County Council. We cover the whole county, and we're trying to, complement the work of the councillors in so much as that we can bring issues. Some people are not happy about raising issues themselves, but they can bring them to members of the PPN. And I would be a community activist, and I would have a particular interest in disability issues. Now, exactly what you were saying there yesterday, like, I live about 4.5 miles out of Letterkenny on the Manor Cunningham side, more on the Balbuffet side than Manor Cunningham. So the nearest post box for me is the post box that's there, exactly as you described it, at what used to be Martin's Roundabout. I believe the council bought that property with the house behind it and all. And beside the post box has now become a park and ride. Now, I absolutely agree if you have one car on the road, that's 5 cars less that's parked there usually, that's on the road causing emissions. So it's all good. Although some people would argue that if you were travelling with 5 people in the car rather than only one, you are more emissions because your engine's working harder, you probably use more fuel. But I think overall, the park and ride system's great. But, and it happened to me even yesterday again, they're parking on the park and ride, you have no access to the post box. The only way you might be able to get at the post box is there's a raised grass area, which, with difficulty, I managed to get up to post ladders. But as a wheelchair user, not a hope in hell would you have of getting on past that. The solution, I think, would be fairly simple, is that if they kept one parking area, clearly no parking sign on, and enforce any parking fines that would be on that. That would allow somebody to either drive in and post out of their window, or at least they could get pulled in. Because, you know, don't matter to myself, that for someone who's transferring from the car to a wheelchair, it takes quite a bit of space. And the only place you can pull in really there is on the route down to the MCT area, which is very busy.
Yeah. I mean, I will be honest, I wasn't actually aware that post box was still operational. I kind of assumed it wasn't, to be honest, because of its location. And I sort of thought, and, you know, I thought maybe they must have. Is there any question of potentially maybe relocating it either, say, into the dry arch complex, or there's another large garage area there just beside the Clan Rhee, maybe relocated there? But I suppose thinking off the top of my head, your issue there is if you go down there, you've now committed yourself to going right down the 4-lane, crossing back around at the Polestar and coming back out again. Whereas if it's where it is at Martin's, you can just go around the roundabout and then back up the Ballybofey Road again without having to go down the 4-lane.
Mm. Well, the other thing is too, if it was in the Applegreen side, Clanry Hotel, you can, when you come out, turn left, and in about 100 metres, you can turn left again and it'll take you out onto the Ballybofey Road. Well, but that can be very dodgy. Road,
yeah.
Excuse me, you'd turn left just past Robert Keyes there, and that brings you on to, as you say, the Cullion Road. Yeah. Turn left again, but it's, that getting out across that Ballybofey Road.
To get off the Cullion Road and then go on your way on the Ballybofey Road, that could be a nightmare too. James, it's certainly food for thought.